Blog Talk Radio.
Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
You're in the wrong place. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. It's Monday night. Missouri Grassroots Coalition brings you live radio. It's 4/8/2013, and have we got a show tonight? We're going to talk with Sarah Greek. She's the legislative chair for the Friends of Missouri Housewives. There is an outright attack on housewifery in the state of Missouri. We're going to talk with Dawn Finney. She is a licensed and practicing midwife from Columbia. We're going to talk with Representative Eric Burleson and Representative Kurt Barr, two sponsors, or a sponsor and co-sponsor of some legislation that's moving through the House right now on midwifery. We are not, it turns out, going to talk to Representative Caleb Jones, a sponsor of another bill that is currently sitting in committee. And we'll get to that right after a little intro here. This is the 100th anniversary of something that we in the grassroots like to talk about a lot. It is the single most devastating thing to ever happen to our republic, and that is the 17th Amendment. If you are more than 100 years old, you don't know what it's like to have your state adequately represented in Washington, D.C. The Founding Fathers were incredibly afraid, as we've talked about in our Constitution series, of an overbearing federal government. And so they set up this bicameral system. Now, we the people, we have representatives. We have direct representatives in Washington, D.C. It's called the House of Representatives. The districts are small so that the people, you and I, are adequately represented. But states' rights was a huge issue with the founders. Huge. I mean, it was the make or break for getting the Constitution done. The Constitution was written specifically to keep the federal government limited. The founders were incredibly fearful of an overpowerful federal government. So they designed a Senate, the second part of the bicameral, and the Senate was composed of two senators from each state. And those senators were not elected by the people. They were elected by the state legislatures. In other words, the Missouri legislature would elect two representatives for the state of Missouri to go to the Congress. That worked out well, and as you can imagine, were it that way today, we would not have Obamacare, we would not have a lot of unfunded mandates, we would not have the EPA dragging its heels through every state in the union, wreaking havoc. We would not have the United States Department of Agriculture telling people they couldn't sell milk here or sell milk there. We wouldn't have this entire mindset that people have nowadays in everything that comes around, that federal law trumps state law. States would be jealously represented in Washington, and that's the way it was intended. Unfortunately, 100 years ago today, they passed the 17th Amendment, which led to direct election of senators. So now we, you and I, we get to vote on Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt. Can you imagine for 1 minute that if the Missouri legislature voted for congressmen and congresswomen, that Claire McCaskill would have a job today in Washington, D.C.? Not a prayer. Not a prayer. She was told twice by the citizens of the state of Missouri no on this Obamacare thing. She was told once no on Obamacare in general. And she was told once emphatically again no on the establishment of insurance exchanges. And yet there she is up in Washington, D.C., backstabbing the state of Missouri. So Claire McCaskill is a specific result of this thing that happened 100 years ago, the ratification of the 17th Amendment. One of the key planks of any grassroots movement is got to be repeal of the 17th Amendment. 16th Amendment, yes, for sure. But the 17th Amendment absolutely has to be repealed. It is the 17th Amendment is the destruction of the Republic. The Republic is built around every state having equal, jealous representation at the federal level. You know, I live down here in Springfield, and I'm telling you right now, the Springfield City Council is making the progressive culture of the Obama administration look pretty good. If you can imagine, due to recent rulings, you can walk into an apartment in the city of Springfield, Missouri, and say, "Hey, I'm gay. I'm going to rent your apartment," and you are in fact going to rent that apartment. Because the landlord at that point just absolutely can't say no. You can't smoke in any private restaurant. And again, I use the word private the way it was intended. My restaurant, I bought it, I paid for it, I own it, you don't own it, you don't get to tell me I can or can't smoke there. Had a discussion with a guy today who had a kind of warped definition of what a public place is. He says that his front yard is public property because someone can tell him that he can't grow his weeds 15 feet tall and can't throw trash around in his front yard. Well, aside from the fact that in the America that was envisioned by the founding fathers, no one would be able to tell you that you couldn't grow your weed 16 feet tall and throw trash in your front yard if you so desired. That doesn't make your front yard public property. And it certainly doesn't make a restaurant or a bar or a shopping center that was bought and paid for with someone else's money and built up with someone else's blood, sweat, and tears any kind of property that you and I get to dictate behavior in. I mean, sure, we get to dictate the behavior of civil societies. We get to say you can't shoot people in there. You can't rape people. But we don't get to say you can't smoke. We don't get to say you can't do what is otherwise a legal activity. But we're coming up on something here in Springfield that absolutely dwarfs all that. The Town and Country Shopping Center is in disrepair. Now, there's a thing used throughout the state of Missouri, maybe probably throughout most states. In Missouri, it's called a CID, or a Community Improvement District. And what you do in a Community Improvement District is you decide what the district is, and you increase the sales tax within that district, and you use that money to improve that district. Now, before you can do this, the district must be blighted, and always in the past, and I would assume that it's supposed to be this way, those tax dollars collected were used for public items, planting trees, in between the street and the sidewalk, traffic controls, building sidewalks, building curbs, drainage, anything that had caused the community in question to be disrespectful. But now comes along Town and Country, and they say, hey, you know, we need a facelift. We need to do some remodeling here. We need to look a little bit better. So what happens is the Springfield City Council decided, or is going to decide tonight, that they're going to blight this area. Then they're going to come and collect tax money from individuals, you and me, and they're going to then turn that tax money over to these private individuals so that they can renovate their properties. It's absolutely incredible. And you listeners out there in the state of Missouri, many, many times Missouri Grassroots Coalition has come to the rescue of one or the other of these communities by sending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of emails saying, the eyes of Missouri are on you. I'm asking you now to do that in Springfield. I don't know that it'll make a difference. I mean, I'm telling you, the Springfield City Council is so far left that we've got a guy on there who calls himself a libertarian who got in behind this pharmacy prescription drug thing. And it just amazes me. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to tell you right now before we start, I don't have a call screener tonight, so we're taking our chances. We're going to answer the phones as they come in. Some of those will be our guests. Our guests again tonight are Sarah Greek, Legislative Chair of the Friends of Missouri Midwives, Representative Eric Burleson, Representative Kurt Barr, and Dawn Finney, a licensed and practicing midwife from Columbia. We're going to talk about two specific bills if you want to Google them up while we're on break. That's House Bill 514 and House Bill 308. We're going to talk about those two specifically tonight, and they deal with midwives to one extent or the other. We're going to hear that one of these, according to the midwives, is good and one is bad. We're going to hear from the sponsor of one of the bills, and we're going to hear from a representative who sits on both committees that are likely to hear these bills. We're going to take that break right now. We're going to come back, and we're going to have some guests in the studio when we return. You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Brain.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
We are back. We have guests in the studio. Real quickly, before we get to that, I want to make a quick pitch for that promo you just heard. The Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa is a tremendous program. We collect money all year long. We know how hard it is to come begging you for money in November and December. So we start early. We start early begging you to send us a dollar or two or five or a hundred. Nothing is too small or too big. What we do is on Christmas Eve, we go to various stores, Walmarts, Kmarts, and we find layaways that at that late date have not been paid off. And we pay those off for the children. We don't ask ideology. We don't care why. We don't hold our name out there. We just go in and we do it with your money. And we've had two successful years of this, starting with the very first year that MGC was founded. Last year we set a goal of $500, which was double the year before, and we found ourselves with $1,000 thanks to your generosity. I want to tell you just quickly, every penny that is sent in goes to the cause. There's no overhead. There's no advertising. This is all the advertising we do. This and some posts on Facebook at our page, some tweets on from our Twitter. The people who go out and do the shopping don't get paid. They don't get any gas money. Every dime goes to buy gifts for children. We don't buy out any coffee tables or prom dresses. Gifts for children on Christmas morning. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, use PayPal or find the address there to send us a check or money order. Do it tonight before you forget. Help us out with that. We have with us tonight, and I'm very pleased with tonight's show. We have Sarah Greek. She is the legislative chair for the Friends of Missouri House Midwives. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great tonight. Thank you, Dave. I'm excited to be on the show.
Oh, and thanks for being here. This is a very interesting to me topic. It was brought to me by my daughter, who is going through the procedure now of using a midwife to have my next grandchild. And
congratulations.
So,
how many grandchildren is this?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Wow.
Yeah. And so she alerted me to this, and I looked into it. This was really pretty much flying under the radar. I want to say that this group that I belong to, Missouri Grassroots Coalition, in conjunction with Tom Martz and Locke Smith Foundation, we keep pretty close track of things that are moving around in the legislature up there. And I'm telling you, this thing was just really kind of flying low.
Yeah, there are so many things that happen that shouldn't happen these last final weeks of the legislative session when things start moving fast. A lot can slip under the radar. But absolutely, this is a fascinating issue, and I don't know if you've heard this yet or not, but up until 2008, it was actually a felony to be a midwife in the state of Missouri. I tell people that in our state and all over the country, and they are shocked. Missouri was the only state that discriminated against midwives in that way.
All right, we're going to get to that. But next I want to say that we have Representative Eric Burleson. He happens to be my representative, and I'm proud of that.
Awesome.
And he's a great representative. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Good. Thank you for the compliment. I was going to mention to you, I admire that you went to MIT.
I
got accepted into MIT whenever I was graduating high school, and I'm a hometown guy, and the thought of moving that far away, I was just too nervous, and I had a really nice scholarship at Missouri State, and my life would have gone a different path, but I admire you for going to MIT, and I envy that. That's really great.
Well, thank you. I got lucky. I was in the military for 25 years, so I pretty much went where I was stationed. I went where they let me go, and I happened to be stationed in Boston at the time, and so actually at a solar observatory up near Ipswich. So it was an easy do for me at that particular time. We've got another caller. I'm going to see who that is. I've told folks that we don't have a call screener tonight. We're taking our chances. This could be somebody from California who wants to cuss me out. Let's see what's going on here. Hi, it's Dave. Who's this?
Hi,
hello.
Hi, it's Dawn Finney. I'm a certified professional midwife in Columbia, Missouri.
Right. We've been expecting your call. So Dawn is with us tonight. Dawn's a licensed and practicing midwife from Columbia.
Actually, I am not licensed. In the state of Missouri right now, there isn't licensure. Yeah, there isn't licensure available for certified professional midwives. And, of course, that's pretty much the point of our work here with Friends of Missouri Midwives, too, is to help try and get us licensed in this state.
Right, exactly. And we're going to move on to that when we talk about our second bill tonight, H.R. HB 514. So we're also expected to be joined tonight by Representative Kurt Barr, who is the sponsor of 514. We extended an invitation. We're going to talk quite a bit about HB 308. We extended an invitation, I want to say, to Representative Caleb Jones, who is the sponsor of that bill. He's not decided to take us up on that invitation. And so let's get started. I want to start talking first with Sarah and Dawn, because I would guess that that of the 17,000 people listening in, half are male, and probably three-fourths of those half don't really have a clue what a midwife is or does. Now, a long, long time ago, brothers and sisters, there weren't doctors to deliver babies. You know, you watch the old Little House on the Prairie thing, and the neighbor lady would come over because she'd had a little experience at it, and she'd be there with the prospective mom, and the baby would pop out, and everybody would say great things. Now, in all fairness, in those days, there were real problems. You know, there was high mortality rates with mothers and babies, but. Again, it was just the neighbor lady, or you know, sometimes just the husband, or even the husband and kids. But things progressed, and we got hospitals, and we got doctors, and then we got specialists, and then we got obstetricians, and then we got big bills, and then we got insurance companies, and somewhere along the line, someone said there's got to be a better way to do this, and so Sarah. Start us off by telling us let's let Dawn do this. She's the one with her hands in it. Dawn, tell us what a midwife is and why we might prefer to use a midwife as a hospital.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Court. Midwife is not a word that you hear very often anymore, and it might conjure up images of pioneer days and people living remotely and doing things by candlelight. But midwifery has really come a long way. It has developed into an independent profession of very well-trained women and sometimes men. It's a little more rare to have a man be a midwife, but they certainly exist. And what we do is we provide health care to healthy, low-risk pregnant women throughout their pregnancy. So we do prenatal exams with them. We meet regularly and more frequently toward the end of their pregnancies. We help them prepare and educate them for what the process of labor and birth is like. We attend their births in the home mostly. In the state of Missouri, the kind of midwife I am, the certified professional midwife, we only do home births, so women are choosing to have their babies at home with privacy and with, you know, a select group of people available to them to help. And then we provide postpartum care as well. So we're visiting them in the home and making sure that breastfeeding is going well and making sure that their healing process and their adaptation to new family life is going well. So the reasons why women might want to choose a midwife, you know, what I find, there's a couple different reasons. often I'll get women coming to me to talk to me about having a home birth because they've already had a hospital birth. And maybe everything went fine, but they just really felt meddled with. They felt like their wishes for being supported in this natural process were not honored. They felt like they started out doing fine, but then the physicians might have wanted to, you're not progressing fast enough, so let's intervene. Let's put you on some drugs to make your labor go faster. Let's break your bag of waters. So they start this cascade of interventions that can often lead to an unwanted outcome of having to have a C-section. And women are starting to suspect that the C-section may not have been necessary. In this country right now, we have a 33% C-section rate, which is considered pretty high. So that what that means is 1 in 3 women who choose to birth in a hospital situation will wind up with a C-section, whether it was necessary or not. So women are really feeling that their wishes might be honored more if they go a route where midwives are attending them. And, of course, we are screening clients. We're making sure that women are healthy and low risk. We can't take complicated pregnancies. We can't take women who perhaps have diabetes or they have a heart condition or they have some pre-existing health issues. They have high blood pressure. We are really only allowed to take low risk pregnancies and help women with that. And also I get women who maybe are just learning, they're coming into contact, they're hearing the birth stories of other women. This might be their first baby, and they watched, one of the biggest things was Ricky Lake's movie, The Business of Being Born, that really brought the whole issue of where you give birth and who do you give birth with to the forefront of women's minds where they might have not considered it before. So sometimes women are just, they're just hearing about it more, they're reading about it more, and they just realize they want the best start in their birthing and their labor care and everything like that. So those are a couple of reasons why women may want to think about having a home birth with a midwife.
Absolutely. And, let's don't pull any punches here. It's a little less expensive, isn't it?
It can be. And I'm always thinking, why doesn't the state of Missouri just really get on board with this and save some money? Because a home birth, depending on, it could cost anywhere from $1,800 to about $3,400. Most people have to pay out of pocket for that, but there are some insurance companies that will reimburse a portion of that for people. So I'm happy to help people out with that and provide a receipt. They can submit that to their insurance companies and, reclaim some of that money. Some people have those health flex spending accounts that they can use toward a home birth, which is fantastic. The state could really, in states where midwifery is legal, licensed, regulated, they might do a program where they work with the state's insurance programs, and they are saving millions of dollars. So I really don't understand why a state would not be interested in investigating this, looking at the model of other states, what they do, and trying to develop a program here in Missouri.
And quite frankly, Dawn, and then we'll wrap up this review of what midwifery is all about. When my daughter had my last grandson, different daughter, the whole situation at the hospital had changed significantly since the last time we went through that. You don't even go into a delivery room anymore there. You go into this labor and delivery room. You're there when you check in. You're there when you have the baby. You're there after the baby is born. Everything is done in the same room there. So it's not like you're losing out on some antiseptic, sterile process here if you do this thing at home.
Right, and most people really like those kind of rooms, and there's a lot of benefits to that. So, and I think hospitals try to do their best to accommodate people as well. I just think in our country, it just really depends. It's the luck of the draw. It depends on what hospital, where you're at, what part of the state you're in, what part of the country you're in, as to how births are handled. I mean, we just hear all kinds of stories from people. But really, we regard birth in the home. This is your home. This is the environment that your baby's going to come home to anyway. So these are all your normal germs in your own home or whatever. It's your own environment. So it's, you're not going to have super germs in that sense either.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. I mean, you're not really buying any kind of disadvantage by doing this at home because no longer in the hospital even is this the super sterile operating room kind of environment.
Yeah.
Where
yeah, we don't. Birth is really not sterile to begin with. So, yeah, you just want to be exposed to the organisms in your own environment and not anything that's been created by super-powered antiseptics and cleaning agents and things like that. So,
absolutely. In fact, if you do this at home, it's highly unlikely that someone right down the hall is dying of of some
an
kind
infectious
of
disease, right?
So,
exactly.
One
yeah, when
thing.
It's your birth, when it's your labor and birth at home, you can invite whomever you want. You have control over the environment. You have there's no shift change. There's no, you know, physician coming in with a trail of medical students that you don't know anybody in the room, and so you are in control of your environment. I think women really like that sense of control and knowing that they can relax. Some women just would not do well in a hospital situation. So for some people, hospital birth is the best choice. It's where they feel safest, and that's what it is all really about. People need the option to have healthcare providers that know what they're doing, that can provide that service in an environment that facilitates the best healthcare outcomes, and for many that is home birth.
Okay, so let's quickly answer one more question that is pressing
sure.
on people's minds out there, because I know when my daughter approached me with her idea of doing this, it pressed on mine. What's going to happen when you're in the middle of this thing and something unexpected occurs?
Right. What happens if something happens? It's a very important question, and everybody should be asking that question. It's really, we are all concerned about the safety of home birth and the kind of healthcare providers' skills that serve women in these situations. So the whole point of being a midwife is that you have a kind of training and the skill set to address any sort of typical condition that might develop in a normal woman's labor and birth. So the typical things you might see are heavy bleeding after the birth with the birth of the placenta, the third stage of labor. You might have a baby that is a larger size because home birth women tend to be very well nourished. So maybe the baby gets stuck. You have to know how to maneuver a baby out of the birth canal. Some babies may need a little help getting started breathing. So we have the skill sets to deal with hemorrhages, and babies that need a little help getting started. We are all trained in neonatal resuscitation. We keep up our certification every couple years. We carry things to help with a hemorrhage, a big bleed like that. And during the labor itself also, our job is to keep watch for normal. We're trying to keep an eye on everything is going normally. There's progress being made. Things are opening as they should be. The baby's coming down as it should be. The baby's heart tones, we monitor the baby's heart tones throughout labor. Our job really is to keep an eye, stay out of the woman's way as much as she needs to do her job of laboring, but keep an eye on, make sure everything looks normal. So the minute something doesn't look quite right, we do try and, you know, take her things at home. Let's try this. Let's try that. And if things really don't go well, we transport to the hospital. We are not here to do home birth at any cost. We want the best outcomes for mothers and babies, as well as any healthcare provider would. So my personal philosophy is, you know, watch out for the yellow flags. Get a woman to a hospital while she still has some options. I do not like bringing in crashing mothers and babies to a hospital. That's not good for anybody. Not good for the client, not good for the baby, not good for midwives. Physicians don't appreciate it either. And as well they should. You know, that should be their opinion. So we try and intervene when we need to, but we definitely try and bring something into a hospital when it needs that kind of level of care. And that's what we're there to recognize. Yep.
And once again, reflecting back to one of the very first things you said, these are all low-risk pregnancies. So this isn't something that just happens.
Right. I mean, things can happen, but that's the whole point, is that we have the training to manage the situation. We have as much equipment as a level one hospital does.
There you go.
Are as well equipped. We carry, you know, certain medications, certain oxygen in order to be able to, you know, deal with the situations that we're given. So we are as well equipped as a level one hospital.
Not to step in, but the fallacy that most people come to this discussion is that they believe that a pregnant mother is ill or a sick patient.
Exactly.
And that's not true.
It's not an illness, right.
It's not an illness. It's a healthy part of life.
That's right.
So.
Okay, we're going to turn to Sarah now. Sarah started us off with some interesting notions of the history of midwifery in Missouri and how there had been some kinds of issues or problems in the past. What is kind of the history of this practice in the state of Missouri, Sarah?
The history is long and sordid, unfortunately. Like I was mentioning, midwives were actually felons in Missouri prior to 2008. Practicing midwifery was a felony, and that had been the case for nearly 50 years. Interesting fact, it was not illegal to have a birth at home. It was illegal to have a midwife there. So, yes, there were families that were having births unassisted at home, definitely far from ideal, and yet they could not invite a certified professional midwife into their home to provide care. That's not safe for consumers. That's not safe for families. That's sad that we were in that position as a state. In 2008, we won a state Supreme Court case that decriminalized certified professional midwives. So since that time, nearly 5 years ago this summer, certified professional midwives have been able to practice in the state. The sad thing is that in every legislative session since that year, 2008, there has been legislation introduced that would either ban midwives again or regulate them to the point where they could scarcely practice. So our motto has kind of become the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, and every year we need to have a presence in the Capitol making the case for the right of a family to choose a midwife if they believe that's best for them.
Okay, and so we move on to our first piece of legislation, which we're going to ask Sarah and Representative Burleson to weigh in on, and that is House Bill number 308. And Sarah, give us a quick overview of what they're trying to do with HB 308.
Absolutely. House Bill 308 was filed by Representative Caleb Jones. He's a malpractice attorney, and it's a very short bill. It says simply that every certified professional midwife in Missouri would be required to maintain a $1 million malpractice insurance policy. Now, that may not sound so extreme at first glance. However, when you look a little closer, take, for example, the cost of a $1 million medical malpractice insurance policy. That would cost most of our midwives in Missouri between $20,000 and $50,000 a year. That is more than most of our midwives make in a year. This bill laughs at families who are interested in midwives. It's a mockery of the small business owners that midwives are. When I hesitate to say this because I would like to think that the people who are making our public policy in Jefferson City have our best interests at heart. But when I went into Representative Jones' office to ask him what was going on with 308 and why he filed it, he looked at me and laughed, and he said, "What do you think? You know what I do for a living. I'm a malpractice attorney. I'd like to be able to sue midwives." And I would like to suggest that that is not a healthy ground on which to be making public policy for the families of Missouri.
Just as an aside, before we turn to Representative Burleson with how this thing is going, the three co-sponsors of this bill are also one lawyer and two physicians. So you folks out there listening, take that for what it's worth. Hey, listen, you folks out there, give us a call and weigh in on this, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Representative Burleson, you sit on the committee that hears this, right?
Yeah, on health insurance.
Right. And so I guess the public hearing was this week. How was the public turnout? Heavily for, heavy against?
Well, there was no one there against,
really,
to speak against the bill. I think it caught the midwifery community. I don't know that they knew that the bill was coming up, but there were some physicians that spoke in favor of the bill and mostly talked about some of the concerns that they have about scenarios where someone that has been using it, that had planned to use a midwife and circumstances changed last minute, and then some tragic scenarios where, and so they have a lot of tragic stories. What's not being told are the tragic stories that happen with an OB.
Right.
You know, they're, unfortunately, life is replete with tragedy, and we don't live in a perfect world until Christ comes again. And I think that so whether you're using a licensed OBGYN or you're using a certified professional midwife, there's no guarantees that everything is going to happen perfectly.
Okay, and quite frankly, one of the disasters of OB is exactly something that Sarah was talking about, and that is our high cesarean. I mean, we have people who just want to make sure that we get this thing done around my golf game, and so they're doing these. They're literally doing birth by appointment now.
Right. Right. The cesarean rate goes up on Fridays and weekends and around holidays. It's a little suspicious there about the motives for that, right?
So I just interject that to say that this is one of the reasons. I mean, you can talk about the tragedies all you want to, but for a woman who wants a child to be brought into the world as naturally as possible and at his or her own pace, I'm saying the child's own pace, which is the way it should be done. Nothing is any more tragic than being forced into a situation where you feel you're at someone else's mercy.
Right.
So, do you have a feeling, Representative Burleson, whether this thing's going to make it out or not?
You know, it all depends on whether the committee chairman wants it to come out. And the chairman has a lot of flexibility in his or her ability to when to have a vote or when not to have a vote. And so I think that I'm not sure where the votes are on the committee. You know, it's unfortunate that we didn't hear testimony against the bill, but my guess is, you know, I've gotten a lot of emails and phone calls from midwives around the state, and I imagine that the other members of the committee have received those as well. And
good.
I've always been supportive of individuals and their choice on who that they wish to partner with or pay for their medical procedures. And so that's my view. I think as a patient, when it's your life and it's your body, and it's the life of your child, I just think that it's, how dare the government step in and decide to intervene with what you think is best. You know, I think that as long as your interests are in the life of the child and not seeking to destroy that life, then I think that it's not necessarily the government's responsibility to step in unless you're willfully trying to end that life.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you all know by now that you're talking to a libertarian here. I don't want my doctor to have to be licensed, quite frankly. I don't want my dentist to have to be licensed, let alone my barber. You know, I'm an astrophysicist. When I tell someone I'm an astrophysicist, they don't say, "Let me see your license." They say, "What school told you so?" That's all I need to know from a doctor. You know, what school told you so?
Yeah, that's my view, David, as well. there's some books that I would love to recommend. One is called The Rule of Experts by David Young, and it's on occupational licensing in America. Another one is called Economic Liberties and the Constitution by Bernard Segan. And then another book by Timothy Sandifer, he's with the Cato Institute, called The Right to Earn a Living. And, you know, Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, and he's right that since the Code of Hammurabi, we have had debates about license, you know, government stepping in and enforcing laws on who can do what practice. Most of the time, government does it in a way to try to really take power away from people that are trying to earn it. And, you know, when you look at it, really kind of came to a head at the time of the Magna Carta. And before the Magna Carta, the king of England and most kings, they really used licensing laws as a way to restrict the market and to gain and to really take hold of that power. So, there was a time where you couldn't sell wine in England. You didn't have a license to do that, or you didn't have a license to make candlesticks, for goodness sake, unless you got the king of England to grant you that license to do that. And And this is no different. Now, we really civilized it in a way where we say, well, only those that have gone through a certain level of college or, training should have the ability to, government's restricting people's economic freedom to earn a living and restricting the freedom of the consumer only based on, basically how much time you spent in a university. But at the end of the day, all you're doing is raising the prices for the good or the service that they're providing and limiting opportunity. And so my thought is I believe the consumer is smart enough to know what's in their best interest. And what we've done is we really dumbed down the consumers in their choices on what they are going to do with their healthcare decisions. So no one ever asks the question when they're going to a provider. No one ever asks or looks up information, how good is this doctor? They don't look to see what their rates of return are, their morbidity rates. They don't look for anything like that. What their costs are. Heaven forbid we know how much a service is going to cost us. But because we have basically, with government regulation and pricing and subsidy, we have made this country, is particularly when it comes to healthcare, being price blind and quality silent. So my view is, and I realize that this is not, I represent probably a fraction of the people. Most people have never even thought about this as an issue, as to why our healthcare costs are so high. But to me, this is one of the keystone issues as to why our healthcare costs are so high, and it's because we license everyone. We at the end of the day, when you're saying to someone that, look, you're going to need, when you need to have a wart removed from your finger, and the only way to do that is to have someone that's licensed in some medical profession, whether it's a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant or an MD or a DO, and that means that you got to, in that 15-minute time, you got to pay somebody to do that. Well, if you're saying that person has to have gone to college and now has medical bills for 12 to 16 years, now you've taken that time out of their productivity, out of their earning lifespan. So now not only are they out of the market for 12 to 16 years of productivity, but now they have a bill. They've got an education bill they've got to pay back. And they've got to make up all of that in only so many 15-minute increments of their working life, right? So when it's simple, it's a simple ratio. We wonder why healthcare is so expensive. But at the end of the day, I think the consumers are smart enough to know and be smart enough to make decisions about what's best for their health care.
And then on top of that, either by force of law or by force of culture, we force that guy taking off my wart to go out and buy $1 million life insurance policy or malpractice insurance policy.
Right, well, because we want to prop up another profession.
Exactly.
Right.
So, getting
the interesting
back
thing about the House Bill 308, too, is, Sarah, you can probably speak to this, is that when lobbyists and people representing the Friends of Iowa, the Friends of Missouri Midwives, went and asked about this particular meeting, the committee hearing, they were told it wasn't happening. Is that correct, Sarah?
That was what we were led to believe by the committee chairman, unfortunately, yes.
Okay, like they were shut out of the process. I think that's important for people to know.
Well, absolutely. I mean, as I said, when we first started out, I mean, this thing was absolutely, I'm telling you that this group that I'm with, they spend, there is not 15 minutes in a day where we're not hearing, reading something that's going on, being introduced, being talked about, being discussed in committee, being sent to the floor, being passed from one house to the other. We're being encouraged, and we're encouraging people to get on the horn with their representatives to
to call people, to write people, to go to Jefferson City, to sign witness forms, to attend hearings. And this thing absolutely got way past every one of us.
Right.
So we'll be watching this from now on. I'll be watching it daily to see if it comes out of the committee and goes to the floor. We'll be keeping people alert. You folks that are listening, stay tuned. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We'll be following this. There will be grass fire alerts as this thing moves. It's one of the things that we're going to watch. This is the kind of liberty-strangling stuff that grassroots people need to be alive about, that grassroots people. I mean, this is when we say at Missouri Grassroots Coalition that we have totally given up on solving this nation's problems from the top down, and we're going to solve them from the bottom up. This is the kind of thing we're talking about, brothers and sisters, right here. This little thing right here is something where every one of you need to make a difference. So keep your eyes open as this thing moves out of committee, if it does, and to the floor. We'll be asking you all to get a hold of representatives, to get a hold of the speaker. If it moves over to the other house, we will not have another public hearing that is absent people, because we'll know when it's going to be, and we'll know how to get people there, and we'll get the witness forms going, and we'll get people up there. And just stay tuned, because we're on this thing. So Sarah, basically, and Dawn, basically, we're talking about either putting every midwife in the state out of business or quadrupling the cost of having a midwife deliver for you, right?
Right. This would essentially put midwives out of business. That's the attempt that's being made. It's not an attempt to protect the public or to create. It doesn't do anything about safety. It doesn't address safety. It doesn't affect, you know, say anything about who can be a midwife or what, you know, anything like that. It's all about just how can we drive this back underground again and please our doctor friends. That's how I view it.
Okay. Last word, Representative Burleson, on this topic.
What is your question? I'm sorry.
We're getting ready to close out the HB 308 and move on to HB 514. Do you have a last word about this?
No, I'm not supportive of the bill and do not plan to vote for it at all if given the opportunity.
Okay, go ahead.
Sarah, here, if I could add to that real quickly, I just wanted to thank Representative Burleson publicly for his commitment to freedom. The things that he has just finished saying about government staying out of places where government needs to be are so rare to hear in the state capitol, and they are so refreshing. And it is great to have an ally for liberty like Representative Burleson is and continues to be.
Yeah, Representative Burleson is, in my mind, the greatest argument against term limits in a place like Jefferson City.
Absolutely, yes.
Although I'm in favor of term limits, I'll let you know.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about we've heard a lot about how this bill is not designed to ensure any kind of safety, is not designed to ensure any kind of special, it is designed to put midwives out of business. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a bill that is designed to ensure safety, that is designed to ensure quality, and that's House Bill 514, that is sponsored by Representative Burleson, so we'll be glad to hear from him when we come back. Stay tuned. We're at 347-677-1835. We're going to take this break.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
is Lauren Spivak, otherwise known as the Free Market Warrior. He's coming to St. Charles County April 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library to kind of enlighten the folks on his perspective of what the free market is all about. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. You'll be here in St. Charles County at the end of April for a two-night seminar from 6:30 to 10 at the Family Vision Library, 2020 Parkway Drive in St. Peter's. What is it, Lauren, that you do when you tour the country to give these seminars? What's your motivation in trying to get this done?
Well, I'm trying to help people to understand the economic reality which we seem to have lost in the last 100 years. That is to say, we used to understand what made prosperity and how America became the wealthiest country in the world. And over the course of the last 100 years, we seem to have forgotten most of that. So I'm trying to help people bring it back.
Great. So, I've spoken to some groups already trying to promote your visit here to St. Peter's. What do people come away with after two nights with you from attending the seminar?
Well, an understanding, I hope, and I think it's still the case, that economics is logical. You can understand it. It's not boring. And once you start to think of things on economic terms, you get the ability to figure out, you know, what policies make sense and what they don't. And I try to leave people with enough information that they can answer their own questions from that point.
Okay, great. Lauren tours the country talking to conservative organizations about his philosophy on the free market. You can visit him here. You can see him here in St. Charles County, Missouri, April 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library. That's 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peter's, Missouri. You can also visit thefamilyvision.org for more information. You can get information at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And we look forward to seeing you on April 29th, Lauren. Thanks.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Here we are. We're with Sarah Greek, legislative chair, Friends of the Missouri Midwives, Representative Eric Burleson, who sits on the committee that listened to 308, and will sit on the committee, I believe, if it ever makes it to committee. Am I right, Representative Burleson, that we'll hear? You're on the licensing committee, right?
Yeah, I'm the chairman of licensing and professional registration.
Okay, and a co-sponsor of 514. Am I right?
I have co-sponsored it in the past, and yeah, I have co-sponsored it this year.
Okay,
he's our lead co-sponsor. Yes.
Yes, and we're expecting to get a call from Representative Kurt Barr, who told me that he'd be along tonight and is the actual sponsor of 514. Real quick, before we get into that, I want to take a minute to flash back to this promo you just heard. I'll tell you, we talked early in the show about this being the 100th anniversary of the 17th Amendment being ratified, and how there's no one alive today that remembers what states' rights really is, because we lost states' rights with the 17th Amendment. I'm telling you, we hear a lot from both sides about how great capitalism is and about how evil capitalism is. But frankly, brothers and sisters, if you're not 100 years old, you don't know what free market capitalism is. It's that simple. So I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it to St. Peter's on the 29th and 30th. I'm going to hear Lauren Spivak talk about free market capitalism and what it is, and why we need it to get our republic back. We have a caller, and we'll see if that's not the representative. Is Dave, who's this?
This is Representative Kurt Barr. Sorry for not calling earlier.
Oh, that's all right. We're just getting to it now, Representative Barr. So we have Representative Kurt Barr here. He is the sponsor of the bill we're getting ready to talk about. And so we'll just go ahead and let him lead off. We were just getting ready to talk about 514. Tell us what that's all about, Representative.
All right. Well, what House Bill 514 does is it creates a licensure board for the Missouri midwives, much like The doctors have a licensure board for doctors, dentists have a licensure board for dentists, and even cosmetologists have a licensure board for cosmetology. In the state of Missouri, we have about, I think it's 30 professions that have a licensure board, where the profession itself, under the kind of the guidance of the state government, polices its own industry to make sure that the people within that industry are doing things proper so that no constituents or customers are harmed. So what the midwife licensure board does is it allows midwives to police themselves and make sure that, there's no midwives that are providing improper midwifery care. And if so, that they'd have the ability to sanction people who were not acting safely.
So the suggestion here then is that this would actually make midwifery safer, or something that we could all be more comfortable with, or no?
Well, does it make it safer? That's that's the question. Does government regulation make us actually safer? I don't know. Does it make people more comfortable? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If I could speak to that, Dave. I know we've been discussing the last few minutes.
Take just a second now. You and either Dawn or Sarah sound so much alike. Let me know who I'm talking to when I hear from you. That's okay.
Yes, this is Sarah.
Okay.
I wanted to speak to that. I know we've just been discussing some of the mutual concerns that we have about licensure and the reasons for it and why the state does it. We introduced this legislation not because we believe that licensure is the be-all and end-all, but because licensure is something that increasingly Missouri State Medical Association, for example, has begun to demand. And they are introducing licensure proposals that essentially regulate midwives out of existence. So in introducing this bill, we're saying if midwives are to be licensed, if licensing is the way we're going as a state, it needs to be a licensure program that keeps freedom in mind, access for the families, for the women, freedom to practice for the midwives, for the small business owners. If we're going to have licensure, keep freedom in mind. This is what it should look like.
Okay, Dawn, good thing or bad thing?
I'm going to say it's a good thing. It's not necessarily that we want, a lot of expensive licenses or things like that, but let me share with you what's been going on in a couple other states recently. In a couple of the states, two midwives have been arrested. One has been charged with basically like practicing medicine without a license. There isn't a licensure bill. I think it's North Carolina, maybe Sarah would know what states. And in another one, a woman is charged again with a bad outcome in a birth. If they had regulated legal midwifery in these states, there would be a proper channel to funnel these complaints and these issues through without having to go directly to a criminal court. So that's what happens in states where midwifery is illegal or it's criminalized. They just find midwives under whatever circumstances might have happened with a situation, a complaint or even no complaints, and what they do is they channel them into criminal court. That costs taxpayers a lot of money. And so, what happens to physicians in a hospital when there's a bad outcome in a birth? Well, that gets reviewed. That gets reviewed by the licensure board. It doesn't necessarily go straight to criminal court unless, if there's a reason to do so, maybe a physician's license is revoked and they can't practice anymore. But there's a route to check into things and to make sure that some standards are being upheld. And so we're just looking for the same kind of thing, that if something happened in a situation, that it wouldn't directly just go to criminal court. It would be properly reviewed by a panel of peers and experts.
Okay, so yes.
That's just one issue. That's just one reason that is a benefit of having legal midwifery and perhaps using a licensure.
Okay, so what I'm hearing here is that there have been attempts through licensure to again just like a $1 million insurance policy, to use it to put midwives out of business. How is this different, Representative Barr?
the way this is different is who controls the board. You can create a board where you have doctors who see midwives as competition in charge of the midwife board, and then you have a different level of scrutiny as opposed to are they practicing proper midwifery care, to are they competition in our business, and are we going to say that they should not have the ability to get a license. So what my bill does is it puts midwives on the board. So you have licensed and trained midwives, or certified and trained midwives, who are overseeing the licensure of the midwives and who can then say, did this midwife practice improper midwifery, as opposed to having another group who simply sees midwives as competition, saying, you know, do we want this person to be able to compete against us in the marketplace of medical services?
But that, now let's don't mislead anyone. There would be a cost to the midwife for this license.
There is a cost to the midwives for this license. Licensure is not free, and there's in a perfect world, we could say, only people who are properly certified through the midwifery, the National Midwifery Board, and who know what they're doing are going to practice midwifery, and they're always going to have a perfect outcome. And we don't have to worry about the lawyers coming around and suing everybody for $1 million. But unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. And so the licensure board gives the general public the sense that if they're hiring a midwife, they know that that person has been vetted and that person is following the proper medical procedures for midwifery, and that if that person were to act improperly, then there would be some way of sanctioning them.
Okay.
So that's the advantage of having a licensure, but there is a cost to it, absolutely, and it becomes more difficult. And you also have government oversight over midwives, and so midwives can only operate through the blessing of government.
Okay, so now this bill, if I'm not mistaken, is second read but laying on the table, am I right?
I am waiting for it to be heard in committee, correct.
Okay, and that's going to happen, you think?
I believe so, yes. The committee chair has a philosophical problem with licensures. He's a big believer in the free market, and as opposed to having governmental oversight where it's not necessary. And so,
that would be me.
This bill is literally saying we want more government. We want bigger government over midwives. Which the sad thing is, one of the main reasons we want this government oversight over midwives is because it is a less onerous oversight than the outrageously expensive $1 million policy or a licensure board that's run by doctors who don't want midwives competing against them.
Let's hear about that, Eric. Yeah, go ahead.
I've told the sponsor of the bill that my view is that I would prefer not to have this bill pass. I would prefer no bill to pass, because my preference is that the state not get involved. I want people to have individual freedom and choice. And I think that the last thing we want to see happen is for the midwife profession to now become part of the establishment and then be suppressing other people from entering into the right to earn a living. And so, however, I do think that it's important to sometimes – creating a shield of defense is a strategy, and I think that this is a way to do that. For the bill sponsor, I think, in an effort to say, if you're going to do this, this is the way it should be done, is creating a mechanism that stops the MDs and the DOs who, quite frankly, if they had their choice, they would outlaw midwives completely again, and if they were in their versions of this bill, they would put midwifery completely under the Board of Healing Arts.
Oh, absolutely, because as we've already noted, it is an MD, a DO, and two JDs who are churning out this $1 million insurance requirement.
So my preference, as you can tell, is really to not pass it. I realize that, you know, there's some people that would that, and I'll give you an idea. Since I've become chairman and I've been on this board for now 5 years, there is not, since I've been chairman, there isn't a day that goes by I don't get an email from someone, or especially the beginning of the year, I don't have some group come in my office that wants to license their profession. And I'm very considerate and I hear them out, but at the end of the day, we're restricting economic freedom and we're increasing the costs. And, you know, if I could today, you know, if someone were to license to require that anyone that does, I'm a software engineer. I write code. And I write code for the electronic medical record. But if, you know, there, someone could make a compelling argument that only people that have a degree in software programming and have had so many years of service and are certified and have a background check should have the right to make changes to people's electronic medical records, because the information is so important and valuable. You could make a compelling argument, and that, if it were to happen, would certainly bolster my profession. It would make it would reduce the number of people that I have to compete against for jobs, and it would increase my salary. And so, but at the end of the day, what would that do for the cost to the consumer? And would it truly benefit the consumer? And I think that being on this committee, our job is to be an independent mind to think about what is this doing for individual freedom and economic freedom. And then also, you know, we have to balance, is there a compelling interest for public safety? And I tend to lean towards that the consumer has their own public safety at heart and at mind, and that we need to respect, and I have more faith in the ability of people to make decisions for their own self-interest than other people, but that's the
Representative
job.
Representative Burleson, I think you would find many, many midwives would completely agree with your idea of not licensing midwives. Many midwives across the nation, we're kind of all over the place politically, but there's so many midwives that would agree with you. And if it were a perfect world, I think that would be an ideal situation, just as you envision. However, I think that given the unique situation that Missouri faces, having just decriminalized midwifery in recent years, we're still trying to fight for our place in some ways. And this licensure bill, while yes, I do think that it the cost of a license might be a bit prohibitive, but in the face of every session there being threats to even just the practice of midwifery with such bills as, you know, requiring the malpractice insurance, we need some kind of security. We need some attempt to create some workable solutions to keep us alive and afloat. And so I think that's one of the benefits of a licensure bill, is to just give us some security in what we're doing, that we don't have to fight negative campaigning every session.
We have a caller wants to get in on this. Keith Williston from Independence. Well, how are you doing, Keith?
Hey.
Hello. Keith, are you there?
This is Keith, yes.
Yeah. What you got for us?
I'm doing good. I thought I'd kind of give a little bit of background on myself real quick. I'm actually on the executive board for the American Association of Birthing Centers. My wife and I own a birthing center out here in Independence, and my wife, Rachel Williston, is actually the president of the Missouri Midwives Association. And it gives me kind of a touch with some other people in the industry across the country. And it's kind of an interesting situation when you talk about, for example, who's sponsoring this bill and what they're trying to do. Particularly, like, for example, Maryland passed passed a licensing bill that required CPMs to have a collaborative practice agreement with a physician. And they've only got one midwife who's ever been able to get a license and find a collaborating physician. And then actually, I believe Arkansas, the Department of Health down there is having to redefine, I mean, like literally you have an administrative agency redefining something that's defined in their statutes, because otherwise they can't find any physicians who are willing to work with the midwives. And so it's kind of interesting to me to look at some of these, you compare what's being said versus what's being done, and you know, the physicians are more than willing to stand up and say, well, they need the malpractice insurance. But then when it comes to their malpractice insurance, they're very pro tort reform and let's get rid of those requirements. But it's really an interesting thing when you look at like the proposed licensing bill. When you really get down to, I think, what the midwives in Missouri really want, it's self-government. It's the idea of having a representative government, you know, where they have a voice and they have a say, and they're not being regulated by a competitor who has openly said they plan on driving them out of business.
Well, now, that sounds real good to me, but then there's always the fox watching the hen house thing going on, too, there. When you start talking about any industry that regulates itself.
Well, you do have a little bit of that, but there's also the fact that at some point, I mean, you have to think about our government in this way. We have elected officials. We're the foxes watching the hen house. And frankly, it seems to be a better system of government than having an elite group of especially appointed people run the government for us.
Yeah. Representative Barr?
Yes, sir.
Weigh in on that.
Well, I actually like to use the phrase, with this particular bill, this is freedom through regulation. That we're trying to protect the freedom of the midwives from, you know, the past of being completely illegal or the possibility of being regulated by competition so that they're out, you know, so they can't practice either through collaborative practice agreements or the Healing Arts Board not giving out licensures. And so you have the freedom to practice midwifery by having the regulation where midwives regulate themselves. Is it possible that an industry will do such a job where they'll protect their own and to the detriment of the consumer? That's always possible, but a licensure board does not prohibit civil recourse or even criminal recourse if a midwife or even a doctor, for that matter, engages in malpractice. So just because you have a licensure board does not mean you don't have another group who you can go to for recourse. The courts are still available with any licensure board. You see that in some malpractice cases with a doctor that, you know, the board may revoke a doctor's license, but he's still able to be criminally or civilly sued if his, you know, for gross negligence or incompetence. And so while you do have the industry guarding itself, that's only to the point where they say this person can't be licensed. Beyond that, you still have the court system.
All right, we're going to let Keith get his last words in here, and then we're going to go back to the specifics of 514. Keith, what else you got?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that is particularly interesting as far as why the midwives should have a little more say in their own regulation, besides the fact that almost everyone else does, is you look at the situations happening with birthing centers when the CPMs were legalized in 2007, the Department of Health and Senior Services, which licensed birth centers, opted not to include them as providers in birthing centers, even though in what they did in 2005, when, for example, nurse anesthetists and anesthesiologist assistants were added, they immediately turned around. Well, it was 2 years because it takes a while to get your regulations changed, but they turned around and added them as providers. When you look at that kind of history where other providers get legalized, get added into the system, become part of the system, but then you look at midwives, they don't seem to be able to break in, you know, they really need some extra protection. And whether that's through a licensing board, like House Bill 514 would do, or some other measure, you know, I really think they need something.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good call, Keith.
Sure.
All right, that was Keith Williston from Independence, involved in the birthing center in Independence. I guess his wife, do you know his wife, Sarah?
Absolutely. She's the president of our Missouri Midwives Association, so we work closely together.
Okay. So he's on board with this licensure thing. It sounds like Sarah's on board with it. It sounds like Dawn's on board with it. Eric has been kind of drug along begrudgingly. What are the specifics of your bill there, Representative Barr?
Well, the specifics are relatively similar to the specifics of other licensure boards. You have a group of people within the industry who will review applications for licensure and then approve, say, this person has met the criteria to be deemed a midwife in Missouri. And then they also have a review board if there's any complaints to say, did this person provide proper midwifery care or not? The crucial detail of what House Bill 514 does is it places the midwives themselves on the board versus having the Board of Healing Arts or other doctors who see midwives as competition on the board. And so that's the important part. But for all intents and purposes, it's the same as any other licensure board in its format and application.
Dawn,
what
is this? What is the training for a midwife? Do you just send in a Cracker Jack label and they send you back a certificate, or what goes on there?
Yeah, if you get the lucky box, you do. it's a process. There are a few direct entry midwifery schools, so you should understand that there are a couple kinds of midwives in this country. We have certified nurse midwives. These are women who have gone through nursing school. Then they get their bachelor's degree in nursing, and then they go on to a master's degree program in midwifery specifically. Now, these women generally work in hospitals across the country. And even in the state of Missouri, certified nurse midwives are prohibited from acting independently. They don't often even deliver babies in hospital due to regulations or perhaps it's malpractice again. I'm not quite sure. But they're very, very restricted in the state, so they don't often do home birth. Certified professional midwives, which is what I am, we achieve our education in a variety of ways. We have to do self-study, or maybe you go to a school somewhere in the country. There are some programs in Texas that you could go to, for instance. So I apprenticed. You can do a traditional apprenticeship, which is, you know, the traditional way that midwives have been trained throughout the centuries. So I myself trained with a more experienced midwife. I took classes. I did a lot of self-study. I also happened to do an internship program in St. Petersburg, Russia, called the Russian Birth Project. I trained in Russian maternity hospitals just for some extra experience and to learn their kind of hands-on skills that are very applicable in the home birth world. And so then I came back, and I practiced for a while, and then I sat for the certified professional midwifery credentialing exam. So what you have to do for that, you have to submit an application that outlines all the births you've attended, all the experience that you have, all the skills that you've learned. And if that gets approved, then you have to sit for perform a skills exam, much the same way that nurses do. Nurses have to, you know, demonstrate that they're proficient in a variety of skills. Those have to be demonstrated, and then when you pass that portion of the credentialing process, then you have to sit for a 7-8 hour written exam. And after you pass that, then you're given the national credential of certified professional midwife, which, as you know, each state is then free to regulate or to recognize. So that's basically, in a nutshell, the process of becoming a certified professional midwife. This process has been reviewed by the same educational review body that has reviewed the certified nurse midwifery credential. So we are reviewed by the same educational board, and it has been found to be adequate. So I think that's worth noting. So that is the process of becoming a certified professional midwife.
Okay. I ask that because, to coin your phrase, worth noting, is that I certainly do understand the viewpoint of needing to get this licensing thing going to avoid the greater evil. However, personally, I come down on the side that Representative Burleson was talking about. You know, there is no good in my mind of expanding Medicaid to 100% just to keep it from being expanded to 140%. Just say no. That's where I come from. Now, I understand there's a lot of politics involved, and that sometimes Maybe when you get, you know, when you get 150 people together, you have to draw some compromises. So getting back to your bill, Representative Barr, there would to be licensed, a person would have to have initially then gone through all of that procedure that Don just talked about. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. The process of the way it's established within the bill is that there would be certain criteria that the board would use to recognize somebody as licensure. And there are one or two nationally recognized midwifery certification groups. And either being a certified nurse midwife or being going through the program to be certified by one of these national midwifery groups would be two of the routes in which the board would say, yes, you have the experience and training necessary to be a midwife in the state of Missouri.
And then in addition to that, there is some requirement for follow-on, for a certain number of hours of follow-on training every year, right?
This is Sarah Greek with Friends of Missouri Midwives. Yes, the CPM credential includes continuing education and recertification every 3 years.
Okay.
And even to get that credential to begin with, that's a rigorous process that typically requires a minimum of 3 to 5 years. So in our current law saying only certified professional midwives can practice, there's a great deal of protection for consumers there. Those people are the only ones offering services.
Because I don't know the answer to this. Sarah, are you a midwife?
I am not a midwife. No, I speak for the families who want access to midwives at the capital.
Gotcha. Okay.
Can I speak?
Certainly.
Sarah here with Friends of the Midwife. Could I circle back around to the licensure issue we were talking about a minute ago?
Right.
Friends of Missouri Midwives doesn't take an official position on the licensure versus no licensure program. But I think on the licensure versus no licensure question, but I think that all of us who are on the show tonight are united in our desire to have a public policy climate in the state of Missouri that's favorable to certified professional midwives. Right now, the United States, we spend $98 billion annually on hospitalization for pregnancy and childbirth. But the United States is 50th in maternal mortality. That means that there are 49 other countries in the world that are better at keeping new mothers alive than the United States. And in those countries who do better at that than we do, those countries employ midwives as the primary maternity care providers for the majority of women. And what we're looking for is a climate in Missouri where certified professional midwives can do what they do best, which is offer services to low-risk women who are experiencing, you know, the beautiful process of bringing a child into the world. And the whole, you know, licensure versus non-licensure, how much government is too much question, is as old as the world began, and it will continue. But whatever we do in the state of Missouri, we need to keep freedom in mind at the forefront for both midwives and the families who want to access them.
Okay. That was Dawn, right?
That was Sarah.
Okay. Dawn, why don't you lay it out for us? Why is this good?
Why is the licensure bill good? It does a lot of things. Again, it creates that security that midwives would like to work under, meaning that, you know, without, we are decriminalized basically, which many people are in favor of, and that's fine. But when you have legislation coming up, bills being proposed, such as House Bill 308 every session that wants to basically recriminalize the practice of midwifery, we're not secure in our practice. So we need, you know, maybe it's not licensure. Maybe there could be some other route to give us some kind of security or some kind of governing board. But licensure seems to work in most states. Also, this bill does a few other things. It also states in the bill that doctors are not responsible for any act of negligence that a midwife might have committed. So in that sense, doctors are protected, and also vice versa, that midwives are not responsible for anything a doctor does. So in that sense, we are trying to be sensitive to the issues that physicians bring up as well. So I think this bill is very comprehensive. It really covers a lot of points. It also what would be very interesting is it also would be we would be submitting our statistics to the state, so we could let the state know how well everyone's doing when you make midwives freely accessible by healthcare consumers. We also request that hospitals do the same, which they are currently not required to do, so we could actually have some real information to compare birth outcomes. We could see how hospitals are doing, what are their C-section rates, you know, what are the rates for midwifery transport clients, how many midwifery clients start out at home but then maybe need a C-section. So we'd get some real information to see which kind of healthcare model is more effective. So, but I think midwives really are looking for having the ability to practice freely without these restrictive and threatening sorts of bills being proposed. I think consumers of healthcare want access, you know, free access to midwives and to the healthcare of their choice.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, Dawn. But in addition to setting up a licensure board, Health Bill 514 does some other things that would be great. Dawn already mentioned the increased transparency with requiring more statistics. So I think, as Representative Burleson mentioned, families can get online and see, you know, which providers in their area have the best safety statistics, who offers the services that they're looking for in the way they're looking for them, and become educated and do their own research. Another provision in House Bill 514 that we would really love to see in Missouri includes Medicaid coverage for midwife services. Dawn mentioned at the beginning of the program that states where Medicaid reimburses the services of a midwife save millions, because simply the services of a midwife for low-risk women are so much more cost-effective. So that would be a wonderful thing in the state of Missouri if we could ever get to that place. And if Medicaid ever reimbursed the services of a midwife, the state would absolutely save funds from that. It will also protect families from losing their insurance coverage if they save a midwife.
Representative Burleson, what's going to happen when this thing gets to the committee?
We're planning to have a hearing potentially at the end of the year, towards the end of the year. I think it's good that we have the discussion. My preference is that this year, at least, that it really is a mechanism of defense against any other, licensure bills that would be harmful to the profession.
By this year, you mean this session?
Yes.
Okay. Which is rapidly winding down.
Right. My preference is not to have a hearing, but if we need to, we'll have it towards the end of the session. Intent is not for the bill. I'll be honest. My intent is not for the bill to pass, at least out of committee. I don't. And even if I did want it to pass, we only have, I only am allowed 3 or 4 slots to get bills to the House floor, and most of those have already been used up. And at this time in the session, a bill being heard in committee is not intended. The bill itself is not going to make it through the process.
And well, can we call that? Can we call what you just said a good omen for 308? Then
I would say, yeah, I would say for 308 as well. What you have to watch out for is the bill sponsor, if he has any desire to throw that on as an amendment to other
right.
bills they're moving.
Exactly.
And that takes a lot of diligent work. And Sarah, as you know, that's when you really have to be very keen and very observant, is to watch any bills. And you're competing against a profession that is very well paid and has a lot more people on staff to try to find ways of getting that change through. So you have to be very cunning like a fox and watching what's going through.
So give us some insight now on this, Representative Burleson. If this comes in as an amendment, what would happen is some bill would come to the floor, and then this would get tacked on as an amendment, and no one would know. There would be a little debate, and then there would be a vote, and no one would know this had happened until this thing had passed and headed over across the hall, right?
Yeah, it could come in. If it were, it could be thrown into a committee substitute bill.
Right.
If a committee chairman wanted to put together a substitute, it could be put in that. So you have to watch for those. That's probably the most difficult place to find language that's been inserted. And then usually if an amendment is done on the floor, it's very public. But that would be what I would be most concerned about, because is it being put into a committee sub? Because the fact that they heard the bill suggests to me that, you know, if I want to get something like this accomplished, I would know first off at the beginning of the year and filing the bill that it's not going to be pass committee as a standalone bill, that it's going to be language that you're going to have to amend onto another bill. So, but what you want to do is at least have a hearing on the language so that you as a legislator are not I realize the irony, but the example of this is how midwifery became law. Most people, when they make reference of how language gets snuck in the last minute, is when they use the word tocology. So what you don't want to have happen is that as a legislator, you don't want to insert language that you have not had heard, at least heard in committee. So that's what tells me that this legislator may intend to amend it onto other language because he's now has had it heard in committee. Once something's been heard, then it's kind of open for game, usually.
Okay. For those of you out there listening who aren't following this, if you would like to go back and review two podcasts that I did about a year ago now, where I had on the show Carl Bearden for two-hour sessions where we went through how a bill moves, what committee substitutes are, how things get amended on the floor, how they pass across, how they get amended on the other side, how they come back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, it's a long, complicated process, isn't it, Representative?
Yeah, and it should be. It should be very difficult to get something passed.
We passed
enough garbage up here. It should be very difficult.
But that level of difficulty subtracts from the transparency that most of us would like to have, and that's what Sarah was talking about earlier, is that and the representative was just talking about, is that this thing can blindside us folks. Now, listen. You know, the people listening to this show, they don't spend 20 hours a day watching what's moving through the House of Representatives. They get up in the morning and they go to work and they come home and they, you know, if they're lucky, they might catch three innings of the Cardinal ball game before they fall asleep on the couch to go to work the next day. So it's easy to imagine how even a grassroots activist organization can be blindsided by these things.
Yeah, and especially when they don't have the resources to pay people to be in the Capitol all the time and
right.
Monitor these bills.
That's exactly right. But grassrootsers, now I'll tell you what you can do if you're gonna help us follow this. You can watch this bill and then you can watch as things come out, because if this comes out, even if this comes out of the House as an amendment, and we're talking specifically now about 308, comes out of the House as an amendment or an attachment or a committee substitute, it would still have to go to the Senate, and that's where we would be laying in wait for it. Am I right there, Representative?
It could start in the Senate or start in the House. So
okay.
It can be in either chamber.
But what I'm saying is if it sneaks by us in one, as long as we catch it headed across the hall, we can be laying forward in the other side, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And that is our mission. This is Tara again. That is our mission. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance, and we are all volunteers in this community of advocacy. We have homeless mothers and fathers and certified professional midwives who get up in the morning and check the House website and check the Senate website. We don't have the organization with, you know, paid corporate attorneys. We are simply citizens who want our freedom. And so we're committed to doing what it takes to safeguard that during this legislative session.
Okay, that's great. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back, and everybody is going to get a chance to say a last word to you folks out there in the listening audience. If you want to get in at the last minute, it's 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. You're at Missouri Grassroots Radio.
They told me that you had gone.
Right.
Totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any method.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details. Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Okay, Missouri Grassroots Radio is here. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. On Tuesday nights, Missouri Grassroots Radio is happy to bring you Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Cynthia talks to you about all of the things that are going on in government nowadays that are directly attacking your family, your home, and your way of life. Lisa Payne Nager comes along, our education and homeschooling expert, on Wednesday nights with the Culture Vigilante Show. She talks about the culture of conservatism and how that culture is under attack by both the left, by society in general, and by the progressive government. Then on Thursday night, Kevin Harned, the hillbilly, comes along with Hillbilly Logic, always a fun and entertaining show. You never know what the hillbilly is going to be talking about on Thursday nights. Friday night, we have our MGC Roundtable. Come along and listen to everybody who you've listened to the last four nights get along and sometimes not get along. We're here tonight still with Sarah Greek from the Friends of Missouri Midwives with practicing midwife Dawn Feeney.
Finney.
And with Representative Eric Burleson. We've been talking about two specific bills. House Bill 308, which is a direct attack on midwifery in Missouri, midwifery, I've grown to understand just from tonight that it is, in fact, not midwifery. And this bill,
introduced by a malpractice attorney, would require midwives in Missouri to carry a $1 million malpractice insurance policy before they could even get up and go to work in the morning. And then we talked about House Bill 514, which was co-sponsored by Representative Burleson. Representative Barr is the sponsor of that, and he has dropped off. I guess he had something else he had to go do, so he's left us. But 514 is a bill that requires licensure of midwives. It is kind of a head off the stampede bill that sets up a licensing board made up of midwives, and instead of being made up of doctors or people from professions that might be hostile to midwives, which is the direction that some want to go. How Representative Burleson, I mean, I don't want to get off target here, but how is it that we have Republican legislators coming out with things like 308?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't want
to put you on the spot. I mean, I know you got to go back up to work with these guys tomorrow morning, so.
You know, I think people act out of their own, I mean, not to be too objectivist, but people act out of their own self-interest and the paradigm that they come from. And I think that certainly, I mean, I don't challenge or question that. I hope that more people become educated and that's, you know, that's the name of this profession. That's the name of the game.
It is. We've got about 10 minutes left, so I'm going to break that down pretty evenly. Sarah Greek is the legislative chair for the Friends of Missouri Midwives. Thanks for joining us tonight, Sarah. What do you got to say in closing?
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I wanted to thank you for your attention to this issue. You know, this might sound like a small issue in the bigger scheme of things, but this is the issue that touches on, you know, basic human freedoms. If you have regulation on a profession, you should get regulation on a profession. You shouldn't pursue, you know, strangulation of that profession, which is what House Bill 308 does. So thank you for the education, this opportunity to have this conversation publicly. If people would like more information, I invite them to like Friends of Missouri Midwives on Facebook. We post updates about births, midwifery, and perhaps most importantly for tonight's purposes, what's going on in the Missouri House pertaining to midwives and home birth. That's Friends of Missouri Midwives. They can like us on Facebook, and our website is friendsofmissourimidwives.org. I invite people to contact their legislators and ask them to oppose House Bill 308 or any other policies that restrict the right of Missouri families to access the health care providers of their choice. We're looking for a public policy situation in this state that benefits midwives and the important role that they play in low-risk natural birth. And so we look forward to working with Representative Burleson, Representative Barr, and seeing a healthy climate advancement in our state. So thank you.
Well, thank you, sir, and I couldn't agree with you more. I'm sure that some of the people out there listening tonight are poo-pooing this, but I have said, I will always say, and I hope that most of the people who consider themselves true grassroots activists and anyone who considers themselves libertarian-minded, and again, I'm a libertarian with a small L, never a libertarian with a large L, would consider these the crucial issues, because even more than, I mean, God bless us, even more than Obamacare, things like House Bill 308, like smoking bans, like pharmacy regulations before I can get a cold medication. Those are the things that strike right at the heart of what average men and women deal with day in and day out. Those are the things that are what liberty is all about. So thanks for being with us, Sarah, and good luck. I want to say to the folks at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and to everybody else that's listening that this is what MGC is all about. We understand that you people who are members of this organization, all 7,000 or 8,000 of you, you can't follow these things all the time. That is why at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we bring you people like Sarah who follow this one issue. We bring you people like Gretchen Logue who follow education for you. We bring you people like Lisa Payne Nager who follow homeschooling for you. That's what these people do. That's their passion. And so we bring all these people together for you so that you don't have to follow everything. If you'll keep track of what's going on at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, if you'll keep track of what's going on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page, you'll get all the input from all of these people who are doing this for you. And that's what we're all about at MGC. We're all about being a central board for all of our grassroots groups, all of our patriot groups in the state of Missouri to be able to come to and find out what's going on there. Okay, Dawn is a practicing midwife in Columbia. Thanks for joining us tonight. Dawn, what do you got to say in closing?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, I would really like to encourage your listenership to view House Bill 514 as a proactive measure that would preserve the ability of midwives to practice legally, which in turn, it really enables families in Missouri to have access to the health care providers of their choosing. So I really want to thank you, Mr. Court, for your attention to this issue and to Representatives Burleson and Bear for their work on this, and, of course, to Sarah. She's just tireless. She's amazing. Thank you so much for opening up your radio show to us tonight.
Thank you very much for being here. And, again, thanks for everything that you do. And I can imagine that it's quite a thing.
It's a great job.
I know. I bet you it is. I mean, I know it is. Okay, thanks for being here. Dawn, a practicing midwife from Columbia, Missouri. About 5 years ago, I got a knock on my door, and there was a young whippersnapper out there who was who was some kind of a software guy down at one of the hospitals in Springfield. I can't even tell you I remember which hospital now, but I do remember that. And he wanted my vote to go to Jefferson City. And it is probably the most interesting 45 minutes, I swear to God, that I spent on my front porch in my life. Representative Eric Burleson, thanks for being with us tonight, my friend.
Thank you. And I appreciate that you remembered the door knock.
I do. I certainly do. It was one of the best visits from someone asking for my vote that I've ever had. We spent a long time talking. I know you don't remember it because you knocked on a lot of doors, but I certainly do. And that one visit probably got you my vote for as long as you're allowed to stay up there.
Well, thank you. Well, keep my feet to the fire. I appreciate it.
We'll do it. Thanks for being with us tonight, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it tonight, folks, for that. Listen up now. Again, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is here for you. These are the kinds of things that we deal with every day. This House Bill 308 that was brought to my attention sometime last week, absolutely, and you're talking to a guy who spends 6 hours a day talking with people who are these kinds of single issue people, talking with people who are interested in what's going on in Jefferson City, following bills, filling out witness forms, encouraging people to go to Jefferson City, going to Jefferson City when I can, talking with weekly with people like Representative Burleson, and my gosh, this thing absolutely just got me. It got me. So I know it got most of you. These are the kinds of things that MGC is here for. You come there and there's a Sarah Greek, or there's a Gretchen Logue, or there's a Laura Hosladen with the who's following this sound money stuff. There are these people who are following what's going on in the Federal Reserve that are bent on these issues. And now You can get up in the morning and go do your job and feed your children and come home and relax and know that there's a place you can come to, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org or the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page, and there it is. So from now on, one of those things that'll be there is this House Bill 308. Listen, tomorrow night, Cynthia. Wednesday night, our great friend Lisa. Thursday night, Kevin. And go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on that Secret Santa button at the top. Click on that PayPal button and send us a dollar. Send us whatever you can afford. This is a great thing, this MGC Christmastime Secret Santa. What a thrill I had last year walking into a store. And I tell this story once a month or so, but one of the Secret Santas that I got to participate in this year was a single doll. There was a single, this mother or father, I don't know, had not laid away $1,000 worth of toys, had not laid away $100 worth of toys, had laid away a single $34 doll for her daughter, and had made two payments on it and had fallen behind. Who knows? The car broke. I don't know. Lost job. I don't know. Don't care. But what a great feeling it was for me to be able to take the money that you sent us. And that's why I share this story, because this is you. It wasn't me. But I'm the one that got the great feeling out of what you did. And I want to share some of that with you every chance I get. Please, Secret Santa at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on PayPal, send us a couple of bucks, and we'll make sure it gets used for a great thing. Hey, next week we're going to talk about something else new and exciting. I don't even know what it is yet. This 308 kind of snuck up on me. But the drones haven't come and got me yet. If they don't get me before next Monday night, I'll be talking to you again. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. Until next week, we appreciate you. We love you. And we will talk to you soon. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.